You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 514. And no, we're not going to talk about politics this week, except for we kind of are. But we're not going to talk about very specific politics this week because everyone's sick of it. It's still up in the air, and we're hoping it turns out good, and we don't want to jinx it. So we're just going to talk about punk rock, punk news, some political punk, but not politics in general, specifically with regards to North American elections, specifically one country in North America. Let's go!
Mexico!
Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast, where we discuss nothing but the detailed, complicated, and intricate politics of Mexico. And we are here with two Mexican poli-sci scientists who are well-versed in the Mexican system, legal system, political system, and otherwise. We are here with Hallie Bullet. Hallie Bullet, what do you think of the current political situation in Mexico? What's your stance? Is it political or kind of political?
All I have to say about Mexico is that I freaking love Mexico City. If anyone has a chance to go there, you should go there like as soon as you can. That's it.
Did you check out any record stores in Mexico?
You know, I didn't. I went to a ton of bookstores, but I don't think I hit up any record stores. And actually, that was a mistake. I should have done that.
Apparently, Mexico's got like a crazy good punk scene, or so I've heard.
Mexico City is on. It makes every American city look lame. It's so cool.
How's the cuisine?
Like, great. I mean, I'm vegetarian, so I couldn't eat everything, but I had some great cactus tacos. I was happy as a clam in Mexico. It's a great, great. That, especially Mexico City. It's awesome down there.
And we are also here with contributing editor Adam White. Adam White, do you think clams are generally happy, or do you think we just import a certain happiness onto them when really perhaps they're just bummed out because they don't do anything all day long except for sit there and make money for other people? No, that's oysters. Clams just get eaten.
I was really blanking on how clams were making money for other people there, and I was really didn't want you to put me on the spot about it, but you didn't know what you're talking about either. What's the answer? What's the question? Mexico? The
answer is Mexico. Happy.
Are clams happy? Well, NoFX says they have feelings too. That's it. That's all I got. How are you doing, John?
Listen, I'm doing. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. Let's read some mail, because we did get some very nice mail this week. You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And this is from Reinhardt, and he's talking about music and politics. Hi, guys. First, let me say how much I enjoy your podcast. I've been listening for years, but this is my first time writing in. A few weeks back, you discussed the band Suck, and Hallie was afraid that the frog imagery on the EP might signal right-wing tendencies. Afterwards, you questioned if Pepe the Frog is even known in Germany. As I'm German myself, I thought I should chip in on this discussion. I'm a bit behind on the episodes, so if you discuss this in the meantime, just ignore my email. Personally, I was not aware of that meme at all and had to read up on it, but I'm not really an authority on memes or internet culture in general. So I asked around a bit, and some of my friends knew Pepe the Frog, but they had never heard of the fact that right-wing lunatics had co-opted. In general, I think it's safe to say that Germans don't welcome to 2020, people. This is an actual sentence I'm going to read. In general, I think it's safe to say that Germans don't associate frogs with right-wing politics. As far as the band is concerned, I didn't stumble across anything fishy about them. There are also quite a few anti-racist statements on their Facebook page. As a matter of fact, the German punk scene today is observant enough that a racist, sexist, homophobic, white power band would usually not have a chance to exist in the open. Unfortunately, bands like this still are around, but they are usually keeping in the underground, socializing with their own idiot breed. That said, I think it's always good to question bands' political stances, as I firmly believe that punk and left-wing politics / activism should definitely go hand in hand. Anyway, I've been a fan of the podcast for years. I enjoy the news-related stuff as much as Tom and John discussing Danzig for 30 minutes and Adam telling stories about going full boat. Keep up the good work. Episode 500 was absolutely fantastic, by the way. Greetings from your number one German fan, Reinhardt. Don't try to pronounce it correctly.
That was a great letter. That was a great letter. That was so enlightening. And Yeah, I mean, as I think I might have expressed at the time, I'm like so jealous. I'm so jealous of anyone that can just look at a frog and just see a happy frog. So good for you, Germany.
I'm totally flattered that there was like a full boat reference there. People don't usually call back to stupid things that we've discussed, especially the off-topic stuff. So that's wonderful. I'm so sad pardon, what was that, John?
What's the full boat thing? I don't remember that at all.
God, what were we talking about for full boat? So I believe that it was me talking about the kind of fashion that I think people need to wear on a cruise ship.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Something
that's right.
Like that. Yeah, that's great. I am sad that there's like a whole more than a species, like a whole classification of animal that's been ruined for Hallie now. what are you gonna do? So that was great, John. The letters all now have to, you know, live up to that standard.
It's not easy being green, and that's the only line I know from that song. This is from Patrick. Here's what Patrick has to say. Punk News Podcast, I love the Later Day Ramones special. I'd argue that some of those albums are as good as the original five albums. I think everyone should listen to all of the Ramones albums all the time. Please do more specials related to bands and their lesser looked areas. I guess he means like lesser looked discography. Thanks again and keep up the great work from Patrick.
I really worry that our expertise does not run as deep as I would like it to actually have like good conversations about some of those things and not have it just be like, you know, like one person on the show knows what they're talking about and everyone else has read Wikipedia a bunch. Like John, like you and I couldn't do a good show about like the Raincoats without it just being us looking up a bunch of stuff about the Raincoats, right?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I could do the Slits and X-Ray Specs.
I still feel like it would be a lot of like bands I appreciate, but probably couldn't talk for an hour about their history. So I would end up doing a bunch of research. I don't know. I'd be worried. We need to figure out a format where we don't have to learn anything. Like we get one.
Isn't that this whole program, Adam?
Nailed it. You've found the format.
It might be. Like, let's say like John wants to talk a lot about a Gwar record. We could just turn off our mics and you could talk about a Gwar record. We don't even have to be there. You know what, John?
True.
You could just record a whole series of things about Gwar records and none of us will have to listen.
That's true. Hallie Bullitt, what band or what theme should we do a dedicated episode to next?
Oh, I don't know. Let me think about it. We'll come back to it.
All right, fair enough. Well, you can always reach the podcast at punknews.org. Does somebody have a song to play and then we'll hit up the news proper? Okay.
No.
I will play a song. I will play a, let's see. I know. I want to talk about this band a little bit later. There's a very cool band out of Philadelphia called Dark Web. Dark Web is kind of Spitz influenced, maybe a little bit more evil. You know, Spitz is kind of fun, but Dark Web is a little bit more evil, but also maybe a bit more anarcho-punk, but they definitely have that like robotic thing going. They've got one album out, a cassette EP, and they're coming out with their second album. We're going to work later. So I'm just going to play a track by Dark Web, cool band from Philadelphia, Dark Web. And we're back, and that was Dark Web. They've got an album out and a cassette EP, and we're going to talk about them later. But in the meantime, let's talk about Spotify. Great company or terrible company. Here's what Spotify is up to these days. As everyone knows, Spotify pays people, about bands, about, I think it's 0.0003 cents a stream. I think it's 1/1,000th of a cent per stream, or maybe it's 1/10,000th of a cent per stream, 3 cents per stream. And so basically bands make essentially no money at all off Spotify. And I guess even more damningly, there isn't even a rate that you get paid off Spotify. The way Spotify pays you is an algorithm of factors, which Spotify refuses to really reveal, although some people have sort of figured it out. A lot of the main factors by I guess, comparing data sets, if you will. But that being said, no one is exactly sure how or why Spotify pays what it does. But anyway, the contractual pay rate is extremely low. Well, apparently Spotify didn't think that was low enough, because now Spotify has a new promotional program. In the new promotional program, a band can opt into this program, and if they do, they are more likely to appear on a random play, or what they call radio station play. Basically, if you just let your Spotify play random tunes within your genre, pop punk, hardcore punk, ska, funk, whatever, if someone has the radio station hardcore punk, and if you have a band with a tag hardcore punk, you are more likely to get played next randomly than you are bands that haven't opted into this program. But of course, the devil never makes a deal for free. And the turnoff is you get even less of a payment from Spotify than you would before. And so Spotify, again, would not elucidate about what the lowered promotional rate is, except to say that it's lower, which is kind of sketchy. But on the other hand, if you're not paying anything, what's the big loss? So obviously, with regards to a lot of the readership, both in punk news and all over the web, this went over terribly. That being said, will this negatively affect Spotify at all? Or does almost everyone not care at all, except for the, you know, 1/2 of 1/2 of 1/2% of music geeks that actually follow up on this stuff? Hallie Bullet, ground-shaking revelation that will destroy this company, or something that we'll all talk about for 2 days and then won't affect them at all ever again?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's definitely the latter, but this makes me super mad. These guys are the worst. I feel like when they founded Spotify, like, they said that it was like in response to, like, they basically said that they wanted to create like a legal digital music platform, like in response to the fact that like music piracy was such a problem, like in the early 2000s. And it, like, that's what they said, but they basically were like, well, we don't like that everyone's stealing this music. What we want to do is we want to steal the music and then have people pay us for it. It's like, so enraging. And like, and unfortunately, I don't think it'll make a big difference. I think like, we've just got these big, big, super companies that just like, they hold all the cards. It's like, I'm not on stupid Facebook anymore because I think Facebook is awful. But like, most people are not willing to make that leap because they're like, well, Facebook is the place where I can like see what my friends are up to, or find out like when that show is happening, or find out when that band is coming through my town. Or like, you know, like now I had to even give up stupid Amazon. Like, I hate Jeff Bezos. I don't like this guy. They don't pay taxes. And so now I don't even order off stupid Amazon anymore. And honestly, like, I'm getting by, it's fine, but like, it does kind of suck. It's like Amazon has like a corner on that market of just like having everything available, and it gets to you super quickly. And like, and I feel like Spotify is just another one of these things. It's like, if you just want to like, you're just like, ah, I want to hear that Stevie Wonder song. And like, I don't, you know, like where you can just look it up on Spotify. But like, this to me is like angering me enough that I'm now going to have to try to figure out how to not use this service, because they're already paying people nothing. And now it's like, they're going to just like play off of like artists, like desperation, and like pay them like less than nothing. I mean, it's just, everything about it is so upsetting to me. But I feel like I don't know. I can't say for sure that I'm totally going to be able to like weed Spotify out of my life because of just the sheer like convenience of it. And I don't know. I don't judge anyone that's like, yeah, what? No, I love Spotify. I'm going to continue to Spotify. But like, I don't, I feel like artists, I feel like bigger artists have to just like in the way that Taylor Swift was trying to do, like people have to start pulling their music from these services. And it has to be like bigger artists that have less to lose. Like, I feel like bigger artists have to take a stand to like, I don't know, help out smaller artists. What do you guys think? Do you, how much do you use Spotify? Will you continue to use Spotify?
Well, I don't, but it's not for any, you know, previous virtues or anything like that. You know, I used to be a loyal RDO user or RDIO.com or whatever it was. I don't know. It was great. It was nice. It was clean. But then they vanished and, I moved over to Apple, which is for no other reason than I was already paying them for 500 things. It just seemed like I should just continue to, you know, put all my eggs in that basket. But so I'm not going to use Spotify less because I don't have to, but it makes me question how much does, and you can maybe answer this because you use it. How much does Spotify, the company itself, give you as a user, given that you're going there to, you're going there to consume music. So you're going there to consume a product that Spotify doesn't create. They're just kind of like providing it to you in a way that a dozen other companies could. So like, what is it about Spotify in particular that like makes it appealing, that has that, the hook?
I mean, it's like one of these things. It's like, if something seems too good to be true, it is, because it's like, it's awesome. It's hooked. First of all, the speaker system that we use in our whole house, it's like, you have to like, there's only certain streaming services. I mean, they have a lot of streaming services actually that you could use, but like Spotify is one of them. And it's like, literally it is. It's like almost any song that ever pops into my head, I just type it into my phone. And the next thing I know, it's just playing on my speakers. It's like, it is, but it is kind of too good to be true, because it's like, that comes at a cost. If you're someone that cares about music and cares about art, it comes at a cost. You are hurting music, and not just young and like up and coming bands. You're sort of hurting, like, what are, you know, what about older bands that like these people maybe aren't touring anymore, but they had a rich music career that was their livelihood, and now they need royalties. Like, they need royalties and they need people buying their music in order to like continue to like make some money off of their life's work. And like, what are we doing by denying that? I don't know. It's just, it's a mess. John, help.
Well, I'm extremely anti Spotify. I don't use Spotify. But of course there always is the counterattack. It's like, well, no band has to be on Spotify unless they license Spotify their music, which is true. But in reality, if you're on any sort of digital platform and if you sign up with a digital distributor, you're going to be in Spotify. Basically, to some degree, it's either you're on all digital platforms, including Spotify, or you're not on the internet. You know, the one exception being Bandcamp, which is two thumbs up, the best digital streamer there is, and extremely user friendly and artist friendly. So that being said, it is the only way to defeat Spotify. Well, either, and I actually believe this will happen in the future. Spotify will eventually monetize and we see this a lot with pretty much any modern company, which is quite distressing. Instead of companies getting better, these days companies get worse and worse and more expensive. If you don't believe me, if you have Comcast, you know exactly what I'm talking about, or Xfinity, that BS. So the point being is, I think eventually Spotify will, and this program actually might be the first sign of it. They'll keep, you know, rejiggering it and say, oh, well, you got to pay for this, or, oh, you got to pay for that, till eventually it will make itself crappy and will collapse. And then hopefully something better will come along and replace it. And hopefully that thing will be, to a degree, artists somehow taking the power back to their own music. And honestly, like, maybe you could make something like Bandcamp, except for it is more fluid in that you can go from this band to that band to this band to that band. And then maybe you can purchase stuff directly from bands from a streaming service that way. And then the bands will get more money, the service gets some money, and everybody wins. So maybe there is a bright future going forward. I don't see Spotify, and I hate to jinx it, I don't see Spotify being around forever, just because these kinds of things because they are so nefarious, and because the core thing is to strictly make money, and not only to make money, to squeeze every single last drop out of everyone they can, the artists, I think it'll suffocate itself. So we'll see. But in the meantime, bands just kind of need to band together and say, we're not going to be on Spotify, and hopefully well, Taylor Swift has already taken a stance, which I think is rad as hell. But other bigger artists need to take a stance too. But on the other hand, why would they? Because why would they risk a lot of money for themselves to help out the smaller guy? And you can't blame them for not doing it. But I'm just saying is this is nefarious, and there does need to be significant change, because it's not fair to the artists. I think fans need to understand that. But on the other hand, I also think eventually Spotify will choke itself to death, and we'll see. That's my perspective. And I hate Amazon. I don't use Amazon at all. And I think you should go to local, buy local stuff, go to local stores. And I think Jeff Bezos is genuinely a truly evil person. And I think I think he's bad.
Adam, go ahead, John. Well, no, I passed the ball to you, John, but I wasn't sure if there was like, because Adam, you had asked me a question, and I wasn't sure if there was like something that you wanted to get back to.
Sure, no, but I guess what I was getting at, and this dovetails off of what John was talking about, anyways, was I look at this, so like not having ever used Spotify, not having like experience being in it, I'm looking at it from afar right now, and I don't see it as a service that is going to, like, I don't see it as a service that's going to ultimately survive. And I think that every move they take that is a bigger blight on their interactions with the music community and you know, everything they do that exposes further that this is just a soulless tech company that really doesn't care about the arts. It's going to become, I think, easier and easier for people to eventually move away from them. And I think that it's going to be one of those things that it will arrive swiftly all of a sudden that Spotify isn't a factor in people's lives anymore. It's not going to be the same, I think, pain of divorce that people have when they have to leave, say, Facebook, like you said, right? Because when you get off of Facebook, there's a lot that's hooking you into Facebook that you can't necessarily get elsewhere, right? You can't, you know, right now, unfortunately, you can't get like good event listings in town. But, you know, if there's shows coming up, you know, you probably don't have something that is the equivalent of Facebook's events section that's serving all that info in one place. If you use Facebook to exclusively, you know, talk to your grandmother halfway across the world, you know, she is not necessarily going to be somewhere else, right? So you have all these things that sticks people into that platform, where they go, you know what? Oh, fuck, I hate Facebook, but what am I going to do? My grandma's there, right? I can't make my grandma go somewhere else, right? So Facebook doesn't need to play nice and keep you in and hook you in anything like that, because they exclusively basically have your grandma. So where are you going to go, right? Spotify, to me, doesn't have a thing. And I think they know it, because if you look at where Spotify's actually been investing money in the past few years, right? They paid what, like $20 million for Joe Rogan or something like that. It may have been more. Was it $200 million? I don't know. They paid some giant amount of money to get exclusivity to one of these podcasters that was basically creating unique content that you couldn't get anywhere else, and that they could serve through their platform. The problem is that if Spotify does or doesn't have Taylor Swift, there's, you know, 10 other operators where you can go listen to Taylor Swift. Fuck, you can go listen to her on Tidal, right? So at a certain point, if enough of those big artists all of a sudden start vanishing out of Spotify's portfolio, or if they piss enough people off that a lot of the smaller ones go, Spotify can't go and say like, oh no, we're the only place where you can listen to the Eagles now, so you better get over here. And it's like, no, like, you don't have exclusivity agreements with any of this stuff. It's just, you know, it's just a license that you have. So the fact that they've, you know, through having a good, you know, computer program, basically got enough people hooked into it that it seems like it's the market leader right now. I'd be very hesitant if I was someone sitting on their board that's going to last. And that's why I think you're going to see them, you know, if they survive, it's going to be because they've dovetailed off into into making their own stuff, into getting into their own content. Really, it's the same fucking argument that you get from Netflix right now, right? Where, you know,
Netflix... Except Netflix is good and reasonably priced and pays their content contributors.
Yeah. But it's the same Netflix. It's the same content move that they're moving, right? They're making, right? If Netflix was just, you know, giving old episodes of The Office and Friends and whatever, right? They could do something like have either fuck up or have another competitor come in or something like that, that all of a sudden evaporates that because it's just catalogs that they could lose. But if they go and they make Stranger Things, they make Orange is the New Black, and those are their shows that they own, well, then all of a sudden you have less reason to go elsewhere. Spotify doesn't really have that when it comes to music, So they're trying to do it with other shit like Rogan and podcasting and whatever else. But, you know, I'm kind of hopeful that something like Spotify is going to blow itself up at some point, and then we're just going to move on easier than you'd think. I have less faith that like I'll be able to lance, you know, Facebook out of my life than that.
I do like how Adam was like, hell, you can go to Tidal for that. Like, oh, hell, like, if you really want a hamburger, you could go to like Carl's Jr. Yeah. Or something.
You just eat out of a fucking dumpster instead of, yeah, I don't understand. I don't understand if Tidal exists anymore or what, but it's fun. It's fun to think. It's like the Zune of music services.
Well, speaking of something that is the iPod of spinoff / secret bands, the Network has signed to Warner Records, and they released a new music video. The music video is explicitly political. It's called Ivanka is a Nazi, and there's 3 Ks in Ivanka with a nice touch. And of course, who is the Network? The Network is Green Day and a couple of other people. The new album is going to be called Money Money 2020 Part 2, and they released the single Ivanka is a Nazi. Did you all dig this track? Are you excited for the Network? And also, everyone pretty much collectively forgot that Green Day released an album like 6 months ago called Father of All. Like, I completely forgot myself, you know. So I don't know. Is the only way for Green Day to move forward, for them to step outside of themselves and project their consciousness into another being? Or is this just another side project that people won't care about? And do you like the wrestling masks? And should the Dwarves sue for the guitar playing wearing a luchador mask, which was developed by the Dwarves?
I don't know if you can give the Dwarves credit for the mask, right? Like, it was developed before the Dwarves.
But the Dwarves had the first luchador mask guy playing a guitar.
You know what? There's probably a mariachi band somewhere that is going to disagree with you. Anyway, sorry.
The Network, Adam, are they going to save us?
I mean, I have an opinion on that, but like Hallie, I think you were saying something.
No, I don't have a lot to say. I mean, I liked this. Okay, I liked it. It kind of makes me. I don't know why the thing that I was thinking about mostly when I was like looking up this band was like that. I think like Billy Joe, it seems to me that he maybe has like, I could be projecting, but I feel like he has some like self-consciousness about his age, because I feel like the older he gets, like when he was doing Green Day, he's like just wearing like more and more and more and more makeup to just kind of like try to hide how old he is, and now he's just full on like wearing a mask. I don't know. I thought this was fine. I thought it was interesting. I mean, I did not. This is also the first time I'm even hearing that Green Day had a release recently, because I had not paid any attention to that, which I think is like maybe kind of speaks to your point, John. Is like, do they need to just like do something totally different in order to have people pay any attention at all? But I don't know. I just sort of felt like if I'm going to listen to like punks doing like new wave, right? Because this has much, like a little bit more of like a new wave vibe. There's just like there's other bands that I think do that better. You know what I mean? Like I'm just going to go back and like listen to the Epoxies.
Or I was about to say the Epoxies. There we go. Okay.
You know, or like even like the new jade hairpin stuff, which we've talked about on this podcast. It's like, if I want to hear punks doing new wave, I just think there are other punks that are doing it better. But I thought this was fine. And I'm glad that they're, you know, trying to do something that's political, because we're in that moment, you know?
I remember the original record when it came out, and I'm trying to recall if there was a time when it was unknown that it was a Green Day side project, or did they always just lead with that? Like, was there a time when they tried to pretend it was just something else for a while?
I think when it first came out, there was rumors that it was Green Day, but no one really knew. But then it quickly became apparent it was Green Day.
Yeah, it. I was trying to remember if they astroturfed that record and tried to make it sound like there was, you know, there was something else going on. Because that was back in the era when did this one come out? Was it 2003? Yeah, that was back in the era when you had a lot of these indie bands that were actually supported by majors, but they, you know, there was some monetary agreement by which they would release their first album on, you know, Fueled by Ramen or whatever, and then all of a sudden they would graduate into being, you know, a band on Atlantic or Island or something like that. And there was all sorts of that, like major labels trying to, like, you know, do indie sounding things on the sly that were in the news. And I feel that, yeah, the network kind of came out around then, and it was quite possible it could have been one of those little projects where they're trying to, like, build up some fake grassroots support for it before it launches. In any case, it's pretty damn apparent that it's Green Day. It was back then.
I mean,
then.
It sounds so much like
I mean, I think they're even trying to hide it less right now. Like, if you even look at the photo, like, that's clearly Trey Cool is there. Like, you can't cover him with enough stuff to, like, not have him look like him. So they're not trying to do that, which is fine, which is good. For some reason, though, I can take Green Day more serious as this than I can in their just like normal human Green Day guises right now. Like, if Green Day went and wrote this song and it was played like a modern day, you know, slightly too operatic than it needs to be pop punk Green Day song, and it was full of really kind of just like trite bass political lyrics, you know, making like direct pop, like direct references to what's happening right now. They're not dressing up in anything up a metaphor or anything like that. If I heard that in a Green Day song right now, it would feel really clunky and, you know, like something that was not going to sound very, very relevant or listenable in like 4 months. But here, all dressed up in crazy masks and, you know, playing really dumb synth punk along with it, I can totally buy it, and I'm fine with it, and I enjoy it. So I'm not sure why that is. Like, maybe this is my ideal way to consume modern day Green Day, is just to have them, you know, like, be a goof rock band.
Not be Green Day. What's interesting about Green Day, and kudos to them for that, if Green Day were the Rolling Stones, this album would be their Bridges to Babylon, which is astounding when you think about it. When the Rolling Stones released Bridges to Babylon, they were considered an ancient, ancient, ancient band. Green Day does not have that perception. I mean, when I saw a Billy Joe spinoff band, I can never remember the name of the band. It was the band that had like the two skeletons with it. I forget what it was called. That was like 2 or 3 years ago.
The band had skeletons?
Yeah, like their T-shirt was like two skeletons kissing or something. I just went just to check it out. It was a lot of kids, and I mean 14, 15, 16 year old. And so that's pretty impressive that Green Day has still managed to stay relevant to the youth, even though the fact that they're the Rolling Stones doing Bridges to Babylon. I mean, imagine Mick Jagger singing "Has Anybody Seen My Baby Around" to like a bunch of 14 year olds. You know, I don't think it would go over as well. I'm not dissing on Green Day. I'm not a fan, but I'm not a hater either. I think their recent stuff has been kind of too try hard, honestly. But I think this is not too try hard. I actually think this is somewhat interesting and a good step for them to take. And I will say, credit to them is a lot of bands that have been bands for 30, 25, 20, even 10 years, they all kind of end up hating each other, which is sort of understandable because you see this happen to a lot of bands. It's, I mean, I'm not dissing on Rancid, but Rancid only gets together like once every 4 years, you know, and the fact that all their side projects are so much more active than Rancid kind of suggests, well, they don't really want to be Rancid, but they are obligated to for various reasons. Meanwhile, Green Day, they put out an album earlier this year, and now they're already put out another album as their alter ego. So it is telling that they still want to hang out and record music together, even though they've been doing it nonstop consistently for 35 years. So there's something to be said there. And I don't know Green Day, but everyone that I've spoken to that does know Green Day, they all say they're all really good dudes. So I don't want to bash on Green Day too much, even though I'm not a huge fan. What I will say, though, is some punks – that when they, you know, have, you know, I guess I'm not a fan of the term snotty, but, you know, snotty, tongue-in-the-cheek lyrics, you know, silly political lyrics when they're young, you know, like NBC's John Wayne is a Nazi, or even like Jello Biafra's California Uber Alice, or Dead Kennedys' California Uber Alice. You know, as those artists get older, they somewhat mature their lyrics, and if they're able to, they're able to keep that edge, that barb, and maybe even the joke in there, but not quite as quite – he is quite as, and here's another outstanding thing your parents are going to hate, but because it's so obnoxious, but it's true. Whereas I feel as Green Day really haven't like matured lyrically or conceptually, you know. I'm not dissing Green Day. This is just my personal critique, which might not be accurate for everyone though. Is I feel as though like Green Day, they're still like trying to shock your parents in 1992, you know, but it's not 1992 anymore, and you're 50, and parents aren't shocked that way anymore, and I feel as though they've never really dug deeper where maybe they could have, and then you could kind of text John, what, you know, they've got a lot of actually really emotional stuff, like Wake Me When September Ends, and not that I hate, I'm a fan, or that song is, I'm neutral on that song, but politically, they seem to be actually getting almost more surface level than they are conceptually deep or interesting or evolving. And so that would be my critique of Green Day. So that's just a long-winded thing to say is it's cool if you're doing stuff. If you're a Green Day fan, it's definitely cool because they're always putting out tons of stuff and a ton of the B-sides. Is this for John G? No, but I don't think this is meant for John G. And that's my stance. Bro. Adam, you've mentioned astroturfing three times in three podcasts.
Have I really?
Oh, yes, you have.
I think it's just the generation we grew up in, that's what we were mad about. That was our problems at the time, John. It's like, these corporations are trying to trick us. That was our main concern. Right now, there's, you know, the world's on fire and there's Nazis everywhere. But hey, you know, I don't begrudge what they have to deal with compared to us.
Yeah, I'll tell you, corporations and astroturfing, I can't stand it. Anyway, here's the new track from BTS. It's a great band. somebody play a song.
I can play a song. We said we wouldn't talk too much about politics, and I'm not going to, but I will just say that I had this moment this week where I just felt like I was just exactly back in the election where George W. Bush was running for the second time, and he seemed like the most detested person on the planet to me in my like New York like punk rock bubble. And then he like pulled out, winning that second election. I think just like we were all just like so shocked, but it got me thinking about how similar that moment felt to me as this moment. It's like very deja vu. And then that got me thinking about that whole the like Rock Against Bush compilations that Fat put out. And then I was like, oh wait, those comps were good. And then I looked back and I was like, what were on those comps that I really liked? And so, I don't know, it got me really excited again, anew, about this old Soviet song that was on that first Rock Against Bush compilation. Now I'm not going to remember the name of it. Wait, shoot, I didn't do it. I can sing it to you like word for word right now, but I don't remember the actual. Oh, it's called Paranoia Cha Cha Cha. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a really interesting listen now, because I just think like every single thing that they're singing about in this song, it just could be about today, which is, I guess, both encouraging to me in that I feel like that was like a really upsetting political moment that we then kind of moved past. But it's also discouraging because you just sort of feel like you don't want to see history repeating itself in horrible ways over and over and over. And that's as political as I'll get. But I love this Soviet song, so that's what I'm going to play.
Was the Soviet, and also Hallie Bullitt mentioned the excellent Rock Against Bush compilation 1 and 2 also included an exclusive World in Front of Friendship Society track.
That was a good track. Yeah.
So listen, we've got a bunch of videos to cover, and maybe we'll get through some of them, or maybe we'll get through all of them. Here is one guy, or I shouldn't say one guy. Here is one person that is considered the next savior of ska, and we're talking about Jer. Or Jeremy. Jer is, he's the trombone player in We Are the Union. He is also Ska 2 Network, and he became famous on YouTube for doing well-done ska versions of any kind of song that you could mention, from Slayer to Green Day to Hall & Oates to One Direction, ska versions. And it's somewhat tongue-in-cheek, and it's somewhat serious. Well, anyways, a lot of people are thinking that he's going to be like the next big ska person, and that Jeremy's going to be the next big ska person. And Jeremy released a new track called Breaking News: Local Punk Doubts Existence of Systemic Racism. And it also, the track includes members of We Are the Union and Abracadabra and Meet Me at the Altar and some other people. Adam and Hallie and Adam, did this track light your world on fire? And is this the next big ska thing that will reignite the ska flame once and for all? And are you too tired of me bringing ska-related topics to the podcast?
No, no way. I totally feel like ska is like relevant to the stuff we talk about on this podcast, right? I mean, at least when I was coming of age in punk, like punk and ska were like hand in hand all the time. I didn't have like super strong opinions about this. Adam, did you?
I enjoyed it way more than I thought, which is to say nothing of me having any expectations on the artist. But whenever I hear him, like, I was a huge ska kid, and like that, it was absolutely inseparable to me from punk. And there was probably a lot of times back in the 90s where I would have called myself a ska fan at times before I would have called myself a punk band. Like there was a fan, like there were just times in my life where it was like super, super important when I was getting into music. And So I have a huge affinity for the style, but I have a absolute stubborn block that, I don't know, I erected at some point in, like, say, like 2004, where I've listened to like nothing since then that I think has been new, that's engaged me. After those last few, you know, like Hellcat era Slackers records, like, I can't tell you anything about a ska band that's really screamed at me since then. And most of the times these days, where I will go and listen to something that is the new hot ska thing or the hot ska punk thing, even if it's a big band that you know is legitimately, you know, good at what they do, like, you know, like the Interrupters or something like that, like, it just does absolutely nothing. And I enjoyed this, so I don't know why this in particular, you know, got me nodding my head and, you know, happy to be listening to it, whereas every other piece of ska punk I've heard as of recent is just does not. So I don't know. That's a good compliment, though. Take it, Jeremy.
I always like when people put like deeply serious and personal lyrics to like really peppy music. That's like one of my favorite things that people do in music in general. So I like this. But yeah, I mean, I feel like maybe I'm also like sort of past my ska phase, and I'm not going to be as taken with this as, but you know, I'm so happy for young people that there's new ska coming out, because I'm with you, Adam. There's like something so joyful about, like, I don't know, it's like being young and like there being like new like ska bands to go see. I don't know. I mean, no one can even go to shows right now, but when we can go to shows again, you know, I'm excited for young people that this kind of music is like, having a day again, you know.
I think that the youthfulness of it, I think, is a bit of a double-edged sword for me too, and that's why a lot of it I don't think works. Like if I went and I heard, if I heard some band go play, and it was just like a bunch of kids, and they're playing something that sounded like a leftover Crack knockoff, I would think a lot less of it than I would if I went and I saw, you know, a band and they ended up just doing like a shitty, you know, Kid Dynamite knockoff. Like, for some reason, that, like, I would look at the shitty modern incarnation of the punk rock and go like, oh, okay, I get what they're doing there. It's kind of scrappy and messy, but whatever. But I would look at like the shitty modern incarnation of ska, and I would just be like, ugh, this is a bad throwback. I don't want to listen to this. I don't know why.
I don't know. I feel like I need to make the delineation for me that, like, well, I'm saying ska, but what I really mean is ska punk. Because like ska, like old school ska, I could like listen to that until I'm like 80, and I'm never gonna get tired of listening to the Specials. I like just, in fact, I feel like I recently, like, I saw the Specials play at South By, like, not that long ago. That was like only a few years ago, and I was like as into it as I had ever been. But like, there's something, yeah, that sort of youthful, that useful thing that I think doesn't age very well, I think just like applies very specifically to ska punk. But John, you like, you're always bringing up this stuff. So you're really excited by it. Yeah.
Well, honestly, I love Jamaican ska, massive fan. I love Two Tone ska. I like the Specials. I love Madness. I love Selector. I like a lot of those bands. Modern ska, I'm not nearly as big on, but what I find interesting is I'm always trying to keep my ear to the ground just so I don't become an old fogey that doesn't know anything. And a lot of the kids are into ska big time. And also, that's also triggered a lot of people our age are also really into ska, because, like, oh, the kids are into ska again. I am too. You know, so you've got that interesting thing going on. So I think people think I'm a massive ska fan. I'm really not. I'm just interested by the ska paradigm, if you will. What I do think is interesting, though, is so many buzz bands for young people, is the music itself is often somewhat sad, but it's also usually somewhat soothing or has a gentle aspect to it. rarely does music that's like sets young people on fire is like super berserk and nasty. You know, the band that blew my mind last year was Amon and the Sniffers. But the super young people weren't into that. That was really, you know, 25 to 30 to 35 to even 40 year olds were really into Amon and the Sniffers. Whereas the younger people were like really into like, you know, Jeff Rosenstock, who does have some bombastic stuff, but he also has a more gentler, mellow side or melancholy, or I would say even slight emo tinge to it. And I don't know if that's just, you know, the random coincidence of a certain generation. Like you look at, you know, the mid 70s before punk, everybody was listening to easy listening and it was brutal, you know. Or maybe it does that tell us something about the state of the affairs of the world? And that's why this kind of music resonates with young people. I'm talking 15 to 20 year olds so much. I don't know.
I think that applies to like so many genres too, right? It's like you look at pop music and it's like Billie Eilish, which is like, I think she's great, but like that, the fact that that's like pop, I mean, and also there's obviously like more like hip hop, R&B and like pop, like there's more like danceable and like energetic stuff. But like the fact that I think you're right. I'd be curious to know like what someone who studies sociology would say about the fact that there, in all genres of music, there has been this like real, like a leaning towards stuff that is just like more, just way more chilled out than music.
Yeah.
Was,
yeah.
You know, even like 10 years ago, you know, maybe everyone just needs to feel like they're just chilling the fuck out right now.
Well, actually he is attracted. Really goes along this trend. Potty Mouth is a band that is another buzz band, although like many quote buzz bands or whatever, coronavirus really or COVID-19 really did kind of put a block in their upward trajectory. And I feel sorry for all those bands that really had some real speed going, and then you know COVID-19 just cut the strings out from so many different people. I don't know if those bands will recover or if when things open back up again, people will just move on to the next thing. So it isn't real. I mean, the biggest example would be the Chats, who and you know, the Chats are a special specimen that we discussed before. But they had so much steam just building and building behind them. They were getting ready for this massive tour. Every show was sold out. COVID-19 hit, whoosh, shut it all down, you know. So will they have that steam when things return to, quote, normal? I don't know. Anyway, Potty Mouth is one of these bands that the young people are super into, but also kind of have the emo, almost 90s alt rock thing going. They released a video for I Wanna, and all the young people are super into it. And the 7-inch is on Get Better Records, which is, I guess what you would say is a label that the young people are into. And also, it's a very progressive label, I believe. So, Hallie Bullet, Potty Mouth, the next big thing.
I liked it. I wasn't like blown away by it, but I thought it was good. And I'm always like super excited when young women are making music. So yeah, like, but you know, it wasn't a song that I like needed to go back and listen to again. I was perfectly happy to listen to it once. And I thought the video was cute and great. And, had like a lot of, yeah, it all had character, which I like.
I'm a big fan of this. I don't know if it's really technically a subgenre or anything like that, but this trend that's happening right now, where you have a lot of bands that are reintroducing this kind of like 90s alt rock vibe into their kind of like punky power pop stuff. I like it. I like it a lot. So this is fun. I enjoy this.
Let's speak about a band that was the buzz band for years and years and years, and then they put out a reunion EP, a reunion LP, and some would argue it just completely destroyed their legacy and any whispered murmurings about them. Refused. They've got a new EP coming out. It's called The Malignant Fire, and it's out November 20th via Spine Farm, the new Rise Records, if you will. And the new track is called Born on the Out. all the listeners remember, after Shape of Punk had come and after Refuse broke up, for decades, we're talking 15 years, people were like, Refuse, it's the greatest band ever. They changed Punk. And so, did Refuse really change Punk? Because did anything sound like the Shape of Punk to come after the Shape of Punk to come came out? Not really, which is kind of interesting in of itself. But everyone's like, Refuse, they're the greatest. They're so complex. They put dance music behind their guitars, you know. And then Refuse said they were reuniting. Everyone freaked out. I went to one of the reunion, the first reunion shows in San Francisco. People, it was like the anticipation was insane. The band played, and then they kept playing, and maybe the sheen wore off. I'm not sure. Or maybe you all like, no, John, Refuse has proven time and time again they're the greatest, and Shape of Punk to Come is an excellent album, but the best is yet to come. I don't know. Where do you guys stand? Refuse, Born on the Outs, great track, or have they done a disservice to themselves by reuniting?
Oh man, I'm so over Refused, right? It's astonishing how little I have cared about what they've done since their reunion. And I'm even a fan of Dennis's not Refused projects. And I don't understand how none of it piqued my interest in the least. I mean, like, yeah, the Shape of Punk to Come was a massive record, of course. And even if it was a massive record, I think, because even if you were not tuned into the particular stripe of punk rock that band came from, then like you still knew it and you still knew that record. Like, I think it's one of those like universal documents of the time. So I never listened to Refuse back when, say, like, Songs to Fan the Flames of Discontent came out. Like, they just weren't playing a style of music that I was interested in. And, you know, I was over, you know, in my goofy little ska punk corner listening to fucking Less Than Jake and Real Big Fish and stuff like that. But then when Shape of Punk to Come came out, like, there was no question that, like, everyone had to at some point tune in and find out what was going on that record. Like, if you were like in any way related to the punk scene, like you would have been like beaten over the head to go listen to that when it came out. And given that much hype that band had, and John, I would argue that they inspired an awful lot of bands actually, but just most of them are horrible.
Like who?
Oh, I Refused in my mind is one of the immediate blames for all the screamy mall emo stuff of the early 2000s. Like, as much as those bands were going and trying to take like take the pop punk universe of Blink 182 and, you know, mix it in with their with all of these, you know, like goofy gothy styles that they are bringing into things, like Refused directly played into so much of that stuff. So much of that stuff that was like maybe a little bit more on like the quote unquote post hardcore end of things than just like the goofy poppy screamo. But like so many of those bands in my mind were trying to do a Refused thing on some level and just like really bad at it. But in any case, so songs, Shape of Punk to Come was just immensely important. And then when they announced the reunion, it was like, to me, it was not something that held any, held any promise in my mind. Like there was no reason why I needed to see that. Like when they announced reunions of bands that I think were less politically high-minded or less like culturally like Refused were self-important, right? So when they announced the reunion of a band like, say, I don't know, like, oh, you know, Lifetime's getting back together, you know, I can understand getting excited about that because, you know what, you were maybe you missed them their first time around, or maybe you were, you know, really nostalgic for, you know, seeing them, but you know those shows are going to be, you know, fun, fast, punky songs that you're listening to because you enjoy that genre of music and not because you're trying to think too hard about it. But like Refused were a band that I think held themselves up to some sort of artistic and intellectual bar where doing something like a latter day reunion for, you know, ostensibly more money would just be beneath them. So I don't know. It just like when they came back, all the mystique was sucked out of it for me. And I probably listened to like 30 seconds of whatever song was on that record and nothing since until right now. And this is not very good.
Sean, did you like it?
You know, I've tried to get into Refuse time and time again. I've bought and sold Shape of Punk to Come 3 times on CD. To me, it just sounds kind of like Fugazi-ish hardcore, and then someone just kind of put a garage band beat underneath, you know. I will say I did see them at Punk Rock Bowling, and they were – hey, I just realized I saw them twice. I thought the first time I saw them was at Punk Rock Bowling, but I just remember I saw them at like one of the first reunion shows in San Francisco. Wow. Wasn't that impressive to me? At the Refuse show, I was standing there. I was wearing my DJ Cool Herc t-shirt. And this girl says, oh, that's a really cool t-shirt. And I'm like, oh, thanks. And I'm starting talking. She's like, yeah, I'm an editor for Maximum Rock and Roll. And I'm like, oh, wow. I'm like, and this was before the whole thing with No Bunny. I was like, yeah, you know, why did you guys decide not to cover No Bunny? Because, like, he's not that famous. And that was to attack that young lady's entire mindset was not the right move. So anyways, and then I saw her at a burrito place later on, and she ignored me, rightfully so. Refuse. Listen, if you like them, good for you. I'm not a hater. I'm just not a fan. I think it's not quite as clever as people think it is.
That makes me feel so much better. I mean, I remember like where I was when I first heard about Shape of Punk to Come. Like I was at. Have you guys been to Headline Records in LA?
No. Should I go?
It's awesome. Yeah. It's like legit. It's been there since the 90s. It's like, oh, it's run by this crazy French guy, Jean-Luc. He like knows everything about punk. It's like, it's great. I mean, I don't know if it's still considered great. It was, when I used to go there, it was super awesome. And the fact that it's still around is like actually totally impressive. But I remember like going into Headline, and I remember this like this French guy, this crazy French guy that runs this record store. I remember him like just going off and like just saying that like this literally was like the Shape of Punk to Come. And I remember listening to it at a listening station and being like, oh man, that's going to be such a bummer for me if all punk sounds like this from now on. but I have to say, I was kind of needing to hear this new track with the video. I kind of needed this today. This was like where I was at mentally, and I appreciated it in like a way that I probably wouldn't have on any other day. And I don't know, does that make it? Yeah, I don't want to talk too much about the election, but like this was the song for me today. So today I was there for it.
Let's talk about something that definitely doesn't address the election at all. Jello Biafra and Guantanamo School of Medicine released the third, I believe, or fourth and final video from the brand new album, which we still have to review at Punk News. There is also a massive interview with Jello at Punk News that was very divisive, surprisingly. Anyways, Jello Biafra and Guantanamo School of Medicine's new album is called Tea Party Revenge. Porn. The lead track is called. We discussed the video before, and I believe both Hallie and Adam thought that these anti-kid videos are a little cliche or maybe not up to the par of the cleverness and originality we expect from Jello, because it's really just like a lot of YouTube clips and then Jello's music behind it. I would agree that these videos aren't fantastic, but however, I think the track is, I mean, even though this track is like almost 7 minutes long, I think the track is rocking. I think the album's rocking. And I appreciate that Jello is not actually, let's compare this. Green Day is still, you know, let's piss off your parents. You know, politicians, don't trust them, you know, which is a good message that I can get behind. But meanwhile, Jello is like Insane's comb over. He's like methodically going through like Trump's, you know, past, relying on sources. And admittedly, some of Jello's sources, I don't know if I'd be confident writing a thesis with those as my sources, because I think you could probably tear some of those up, but some of them are legit. And so I think Jell-O has aged quite well with his politics, and also I like that he's angrier and more pissed off than he's ever been. Although I think with Jell-O, like, him being pissed off is him having fun. Like, I think Jell-O enjoys this, you know. But actually, that might not be true either, because he's been quite clear that he deals with depression a lot. And so maybe that's not true. I take that back. That being said, I do think Jell-O's having fun when he's fired up and the music is totally rocking. And I think this is fired up and totally rocking. And even though it's almost 7 minutes long, I think without question, this is the best GSM album by far.
I thought this was awesome, and I actually didn't have a problem with the video. I thought it was really effective. I thought all the imagery, like the song was I don't know. I thought the imagery was actually really effective. And you're right, it is just kind of like YouTube clips, but somehow just seeing all of that stuff all in like one consolidated thing, I thought it really drove home the point of the song. And I think this is great. I really think it's great. I feel like this is what punks do. Like, this is what we do. We fight fascists. We call out hypocrisy in our leaders, and we we call out oppression in our government. And it's like, I'm feeling like right now that punk is like, you know, like this old superhero that like hasn't totally been like, has like gotten a little fat and retired and didn't totally think that he or she was like needed anymore. And then suddenly like up comes the bat signal. I don't know. I just feel like,
I'm pretty sure you just wrote like a movie treatment that we could sell for like $2 million.
I don't know. I do feel like the world needs punk right now. I feel like punk is like, so, and this song is just like really like, just the prime example of that, that there is just something about like the pointedness and the like rage and the honesty and the simplicity of punk that just like cuts to the core of like, I thought this was, I thought more about it. I think the world needs this right.
Yeah, Adam.
Oh shit! My argument for the opposite just sort of blows it out of the water. No, this is good. I think Jell-O and the band right now actually sound quite well. He sounds amazing for his age. Like, he does not like he. I'd have a hard time plucking like if I wasn't aware of them, plucking random, you know, Jell-O tracks from throughout his life and saying like, oh, on this one he's you know. He's over the hill, but this is him as a teenager. Like, he just has like just like an evergreen voice, which is I guess partly why it's so distinctive. So you know, he sounds good. The band sounds really pissed off. You know, I could take or leave the clip show videos, but there is something about Jell-O's persistence over the years that I think earns him the right to do these kind of things and not have it seem. I don't know, just not have it seem base or unearned or hokey or anything like that. Like you could take some, like, all right, we talked about those Descendants songs last week, and even though the you know, no disrespect to them, but they're not a band that has been that has been characterized as being as consistently fired up about leftist politics, say, than Jell-O's been. So if the video for one of those suffrage songs from last week was this, I'd be like, well, they're laying it on a little thick with what they're doing here. Like, it doesn't fit the character of the band. But Jell-O, you know, Jell-O's whole persona is that he's this, you know, raving madman of a frontman. So for him to have a video that's full of, like, the very thumbnail to the video is a sort of pixelated version of Trump's head with a giant fireball behind it. Like to have a, to go with that imagery, I think if you're Jell-O, just like it works. Like you are someone that gets to own that. So it works. The whole thing works.
We'll wrap this up, but I'll let you guys in on, this is an inside info. but the spoken weird info. Of course, Jell-O and the Dead Kennedys are not fans of each other. Jell-O and East Bay Ray and Jell-O and Klaus Fluoride, and actually Jell-O and DH. It's not a positive relationship at this point. The weird thing is the Dead Kennedys Facebook, which is controlled by Klaus and East Bay Ray, have been like, and this is a new phenomenon, they've been posting all this extremely pro Jell-O stuff recently. Like, they posted our interview with Jell-O, not the part where he talks bad about the Dead Kennedys, but before that. But also they'll be like, here's a video of Jell-O and the Melvins from 2005. And it's like so weird. It's like, why are you posting, like, it'd be one thing if they were posting like, here's a clip from 1983 and like Jell-O is the singer in 1983, but it's like stuff about Jell-O removed from the Dead Kennedys, which is weird, right? And no one knows why they're doing that. Are they purposely trying to like confuse people to think that Jell-O is still in the Dead Kennedys, which Jell-O has been making that argument for the past 20 years, which I didn't believe at all, but now I'm starting to believe? Or are they trying to say, even though Jell-O's always talking bad about us, we still support him? Or is it just whacked out weirdness?
Whacked out weirdness. We don't get the shoes.
They have it. It's whacked out weirdness. It's whacked out weirdness. Somebody play a song and we'll be back for just a few minutes and wrap this bad boy on up. Adam, it's your time to play. It's your chance to play a song. Adam, it is now your turn to play a song.
It is. All right, let's do that. Okay, here's something short. All right. So there's a hardcore trio that plays out of Toronto. They're called School Damage. They had a record that came out in 2018 called Hello Cruel World. They just this past week threw out a couple songs to remind people that they're still alive during this pandemic. There's two tracks on this thing. One is called No Love and one is called Some People Actually Like Their Jobs. And if you tally up the running time of the two songs, it's probably like a minute 40. So I'm going to play, I'll play No Love from that. And then you guys can all go to sleep. So here's like, I don't know, 68 seconds of School Damage.